Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Our program today is all about pain. We're going to talk about causes of chronic pain, how to avoid it, and how to treat it. First, let's talk about back pain, a condition that afflicts so many of us at middle age. And here's the bad news. 80% of us in the U.S. will suffer back pain at some point in our lives by age 55. Has yours arrived yet? Back pain so often shows up at the most inopportune times, doesn't it? It destroys vacations, weekend outings, holidays, special occasions. And if you hold any job that requires movement or lifting of any kind, it can put you off work, lead to temporary or even worse, permanent disability. And it impacts both blue-collar and white-collar occupations and men and women alike. And my first guest today is Dr. Winifred Bragg, M.D., an expert in providing non-surgical treatment for injury and pain that results from spinal or orthopedic conditions. And she's treated thousands of patients successfully over the past 20 years, providing a comprehensive approach to pain reduction. And her stated mission, empower patients and provide them with tools to knock out pain non-surgically with as little medication as possible. And she's author of a brand new book, Knockout Pain, Secrets to Maintain a Healthy Back. Read this before you go to the doctor. And hello, Dr. Bragg. It's indeed an honor to have you with us here today.
Hello, Roy. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's begin with the basics. What's going on inside our bodies that makes our back hurt? What are some of the most common causes of back pain?
Well, there are a lot of things that cause back pain, but I say that what we have something that I call the O's of life that contribute to back pain, and I just coined that so people could remember. As we get older, our back starts to show some arthritic changes, so osteoarthritis, osteoporosis, you know, when the bones in the back become thinner, overweight, obesity, overuse, as you said, doing repetitive things without taking a break. Yeah. Some occupations put us at risk because we do prolonged sitting. A lot of people think it's just the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Heavy lifting can affect your back if you lift the wrong way, but too much sitting can do it as well.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah, that's interesting. You talk about the O's of back pain. Well, back pain is often caused by injury, obviously, and aside from car wrecks, what are some of the most common injuries or strains that can cause lingering back pain, looking at that aspect of it?
Well, sometimes you can fall. That can cause it. For women, pregnancy can cause something called sacroiliitis, can affect their low back and affect some ligaments down in the junction between their back and their hip. That can cause it. One of the things I address in my book talks about gardening, and I give people tools for gardening because I noticed that from just my neighbors. They always had an influx of them right around the time when it was time to do the weeding and mulching in our yards, just doing that repetitive pruning and picking up the mulch and weeding and never taking a break. And the biggest thing is, Roy, not warming up before you do it. You talk about middle age, we sit around all winter, don't do anything. As soon as the little spring comes, we say we're going to rush out to the yard and start pruning and didn't do any kind of warming of your muscles. What do you think?
Yeah, we do that sometimes when we run out and start jogging or doing something like that without warming up.
That's right, and not doing those warm-ups. The fundamental things that we learned as children, we don't carry on to our middle age, and we just think, okay, let me start. I'm going to start a walking program and not warm up. What happens? You hurt
your back. Well, I know you had some good advice for some things we commonly do. I know it's mid-March, and hopefully most of the heavy snow is behind us, but how should we shovel snow to avoid pain in our back?
Well, the correct way to shovel snow is to stand with your knees bent and push from the end of the handle to relieve pressure on your back. And the main thing, avoid those twisted maneuvers. This is not a dance. You're not Fred Astaire. You don't want to do any twisting with that back. Bend the knees and push from the back of the handle of the shovel, and just don't do that twisting, and you could be okay. And then take a break. Take a postural break. If you have a pile of snow, you just can't move it all in one set, and you got to take a little break from it.
Yeah, that's a very good advice. This is very interesting. How do you avoid back pain when you're carrying groceries or even picking up your kids as they get bigger or your pets?
One of the things you want to make sure, again, is that we don't do anything with our arms outstretched. Your grandchildren or your children may run to you and you have your arms stretched out. Well, you hug them, bring them close, and then pick them up. We call that the lever arm principle. You don't want to do anything picking up while your arms are far out from your body. So bring the pet and bring your arms close to your body, bend your knees, keep the back as straight as possible as you can, and then pick up the child and the groceries. So the main thing is do not pick them up with outstretched arms.
Yeah, this is fascinating. What do you do when you're leaning over to wash dishes? I know you had a recommendation for that I never would have thought of.
Well, I learned that because when it's Thanksgiving time, I hate to sound a little sexist here, Roy, but a lot of times the men are going to watch the football games and everything and say, we need to watch football games. You ladies that cook the dinner, go on in there now and wash the dishes. So I said, hey, you could come in here and help. Oh, well, my back hurts. My back hurts. This is what my father and my brother would say. My back is hurting. I said, get up off that couch. I told you too much sitting can cause it. But if you would just put one foot on the ledge of your sink or take a small stool and put one foot on that stool, that's going to leave some of the pressure off the muscles in your back and off the disc. You see, as we mature, imagine a mattress, Roy.
Yeah.
And if you had that same mattress for 45, 50 years, we couldn't sleep on that mattress. But our discs came with us when we were born, and they're still there. And so we want to protect those. Those are the cushions between the bones in the back.
Yeah.
And as we get mature, I call it mature, because when I tell my patients are getting older, they get a little offensive. So I say, as we get more mature, those discs kind of thinned out a little bit. So we want to take the pressure off of them, and just putting a foot on a stool, you will be able to lead that football game, come over there and help somebody wash a few dishes.
Yeah, we don't want to hear that, though. Us men.
Hey, Dr. Bragg didn't tell you what to do.
When you're talking about sitting, March Madness is upon us, and some of us end up watching like 6 or 8 hours a day watching college basketball on TV, and incredibly, we can experience pain, as you say, from sitting too long. Any suggestion on how we can avoid back pain while watching extended TV? I thought that was great, what I saw on your website.
One of the things that we can do, you can always put a lumbar roll in your chair.
Oh.
If you don't have a lumbar roll, you can get them from any store, Walmart, Kmart, any of the Targets, and get a lumbar roll. Put it in a small part of your back. That's going to help you.
Oh,
if you don't have that, you can roll up a towel and put in there. But more importantly, after you've been sitting an hour and a half, 2 hours, get up. You may put the snacks that you're eating in the kitchen, and that's going to force you to have to walk to get up water, get a drink, and that's going to help you. And then
you don't have to feel guilty about eating because you got that great exercise to go get it.
Great exercise going on that you can go back and forth and do that while you're watching the basketball game. You can buy one of those stability balls, and if you use that, those are great for your back. If you simply sit on a stability ball, that helps to improve your posture, and as you improve your posture, that's going to increase your abdominal strength. And that's what we want to make sure, that we increase our back and our abdominal muscles. So watching March Madness, get up, cheer for your team. Just don't sit on the sofa. Get up off the sofa, cheer for them, get a stability ball, and then do a few extension exercises.
Yeah, I like when you say get up and stretch and maybe even exercise during commercials, because nobody really wants to watch those anyway.
That's right. Even though they may pay $1 billion for those, we don't want to watch those. We want to go on somewhere else. So, now, sometimes you can do exercise where you put your hands on your hip and lean backwards. But sometimes as we get older, we get a condition called spinal stenosis. Stenosis just means that your spine has gotten narrow. The place where the nerves come out is narrow. We'll notice that if you ever go to the grocery store, you may notice people with a grocery cart, and they're leaning over the cart.
Yeah.
And they lean over that cart because it makes them feel better. We call that kind of the grocery cart sign. But that kind of gives us a hint when a patient tells me, oh, gosh, I can't wait till I get to the store and lean over that cart, and I'm leaning over the sink. That says they have spinal stenosis because when they stand up straight, their back hurts. Means they've gotten arthritis, and those holes where the nerve comes out has gotten narrow. So in those situations, you wouldn't want to do exercises where you bend backwards. You want to lay on your sofa, lay on the bed, and bring your knees to your chest. That's why it's important to have an evaluation so you know what's causing your back pain so you do the appropriate exercises, because all the exercises don't help for everybody.
Yeah.
But one of the goals I wanted to make sure, my purpose for writing this, Roy, is that, you know, in the United States, twice as many people have back surgeries as opposed to other countries. And so I want the message to be clear that really only 5% of people with back pain really need back surgery.
Oh, I see. Well, I know you say, we all know obesity in America is a major problem. Does significant extra weight contribute to back pain? I assume it probably does, but how is that affected?
Well, as a doctor, you know, everything you do, a friend of mine said her nose was running. She went to the doctor, and he told her to lose weight. She called me, how is that?
Well, I can see how carrying a big paunch around in your middle would put pressure on your back, I guess.
Yes, and it affects your posture. Yet I have patients who are obese and they don't have back pain. But theoretically, if you're carrying that extra weight around the middle, that would affect your posture, put more pressure on your disc, and could cause you more back pain. And the more fit you are, the less likely you are to have back pain.
Well, if I were to come to your clinic in the Hampton Roads, Virginia area with back pain, how would you diagnose my problem? What questions would you ask me, and how do you go about determining what the cause of the back pain is?
And that's wonderful that you'd ask that, because pain is not like other things where you can't see it. I can't see you bleeding. So the patient has to come with some information. What makes it worse? What makes it better? Like the simple thing that you tell me, if you're going to the store and you say leaning over that cart makes me feel better. But when I stand up and walk any distance, I have pain radiating to my buttocks. So telling me when you get it, how long it lasts, what makes it better, what makes it worse. I want to know, do you have numbness and tingling with it? Are your legs weak? But a big thing we need to know that determines whether you need surgery or not, are you having loss of control of your bowel and bladder? That doesn't mean you have to go a little more often, because as we get middle-aged, we may have to go a little more often.
Yeah.
But are you wetting your pants and having those kind of problems? Because when you have that, that's the one thing that's a surgical emergency if you're losing control of your bowel or bladder.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Now, so what are some of the most common treatment options you recommend for patients to alleviate lower back pain without surgery or heavy medication? What are some of the things we should do to
Well, some of the things is like I talked about, maintaining good posture, staying as fit as you can. Sometimes people need to go to a physical therapist, because a physical therapist will be able to show you the correct exercises for you, because it doesn't do you any good to go and do the wrong exercises for your back and to do them the wrong way. Sometimes people have a ruptured disc. You've heard of sciatica, where a nerve in your back is pinching and radiating down your leg. That's common. And a lot of people think that, I got a ruptured disc. That sounds horrible. I'm going to have surgery.
Yeah.
Really, 90% of people with a ruptured disc should be able to resolve that non-surgically. You can, you told them without medication, because you can take some medications, but you can also have what was called an epidural steroid injection. If a person does that under x-ray guidance, we can put steroids right around the nerve where the nerve comes out from the back, and that helps to calm the pain and inflammation while that disc resolves. What people don't know is that disc is going to resolve over time. But what pushes a person to surgery, Roy, is if I tell you it's going to take 4 or 5 months for it to resolve, you're like, hey, I can't stay like that.
Yeah.
But that epidural is going to decrease your pain and inflammation while the disc is naturally resolving. And so that's one of the things that people don't think about doing epidural injections and other interventional techniques that can reduce back pain rather than having a surgical intervention.
Yeah, that certainly sounds better to me. But well, what if you're working on your job and all of a sudden pain arises while you're at work? Are there exercises you can perform at work to reduce your pain and help you make it through the day? What would you do if it comes up while you're the officer
of
the shop?
If you're sitting at work, one of the things that you want to do, again, is get up from that desk. I noticed this a lot with bookkeepers and accountants who would come to me after tax time, and boy, their backs were hurting. And I'm like, how long have you been sitting? Well, I had to do the taxes.
Yeah.
Well, they have been sitting long, long hours, salespeople trying to make deadlines, just sitting. TV holics that just want to watch television all day. And so, again, after sitting 1.5, 2 hours, get up from your desk and walk around and do some exercises, some stretching exercises to alleviate that pressure, and take a break to the bathroom. That may be a good thing to do. And then check your posture to make sure that you have your desk sitting as best that you can with your hips flexed, the knees and feet flat on the floor, and back straight in your seat. You want to make sure that your shoulders are relaxed, your feet are flat on the floor, and that you're sitting up, and that your knees are level with your hips if you're someone sitting at a table or a desk.
Yeah. Well, this is weird. About once or twice a year, I wake up in the morning with a gut-wrenching pain in my back. I have trouble standing up and walking across the room. And normally I can't recall any recent injury or strain, but within a week or two, without seeing a doctor, my pain goes away. When and under what circumstances should you go to a medical doctor for treatment of back pain, or does it usually go away like that? Or what should cause you to go to the doctor?
I got you. Well, like I said, loss of control of bowel or bladder is one. If you have fever associated with your back pain, if you're over 50 and your back pain is worse at night, and you're waking up with sweating and back pain, and you know it's worse at night when you're sleeping, then that's an indication to go to the doctor.
Oh.
If you've done what your routine home remedies are, and your back pain seems to be getting worse after 3 or 4 days, then I would consult a doctor. If you have unintentional weight loss associated with it, because, for instance, prostate cancer spreads to bone, Roy. So if men haven't had their preventive tests, like having their colon checked, having their prostate checked, these cancers can spread to bone. So that's why we worry about the unintentional weight loss if you haven't had your preventive tests and have associated back pain. That's when you would want to go to the doctor. So the long and short of that is if the pain is getting worse after you've done your remedies and, like you say, 3 or 4 days, you're not better, you have loss of control of bowel or bladder, fever with it, sweating at night or worsening night pain, and unintentional weight loss.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's well, let's talk briefly about your new book, Knockout Pain, Secrets to Maintain a Healthy Back. Is your book written primarily for medical health professionals, or can the average Joe or Jill benefit as well?
I wanted Joe and Jill to be able to understand what causes back pain, so when they have certain symptoms, they would have an idea of what's going on, and they could have some things that they could do. But I wanted Joe and Jill to also know that I have a chapter in here to how to make your doctor visit better. What kind of things should you say when you go to the doctor's call? Help the doctor to help you.
Yeah.
Often people with pain don't come with the tools to help us help them, like what makes it better, what makes it worse, what medication. So it's going to increase your dialogue with the doctor. So I did it for average Joe and Jill so that when they go to the doctor, if the doctor says, I think you need surgery, you want to make sure that you've exhausted your other options like you would with any other part of the body before you leap to surgery, because surgery doesn't necessarily cure back pain.
Yeah, I love the way your book's organized. You start out with basics of the lumbar spine, and then you go into 10 common causes of back pain, treatment options to reduce back pain, and then you have a section on when the doctor is needed and the actions you must take. I like the way it's sort of spells out the various aspects.
I tried to address some myths as well. Some people think that because they don't have a rigid mattress, let me go and buy a $3,000 mattress, that's the cure. That's not really the cure. And so some people break up with significant others because he had to have a stiff mattress and you had to have a soft one. I tell them, you can go back and get that person if that's what caused your divorce, because the stiff mattress didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, where should we go to preview and purchase your book? Where's the best place to do that?
You can go to Amazon.com and look up Dr. Winifred Bragg, and the book will pop up there. You can also go to my website, knockoutpain.com, and you can sign up for monthly tips. I give out monthly tips on prevention of orthopedic and back pain tips to help you prevent tips, and they're free, and you can get monthly tips to help you prevent back pain by simply going to www.knockoutpain.com.
Boy,
or, like I said, to Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, that website was very helpful when I reviewed it, and I would highly recommend you go to that Knockout Pain website, and you can also check out her book through there, too. But in conclusion, as so many of us know, back pain can ruin your day, a lot more than that, obviously. Fortunately for me, when I get back pain, it goes away naturally within a few days without treatment, but I can only imagine how disruptive and hurtful back pain can be when it persists day after day and night after night. But the good news is that, as Dr. Winifred Bragg explains, there are effective preventive and treatment options, and if back pain is disrupting and ruining your quality of life or the life of a loved one, I highly recommend her book, Knockout Pain. With a comprehensive understanding of causes, you will know how to prevent back pain before it begins, and that's obviously the best way to do it. But should you suffer, you can serve hand-in-hand as a knowledgeable partner with your physician and therapist to once and for all knock out and banish back pain from your daily life. And back pain is surely one thing you won't miss. And thanks a million, Dr. Winifred Bragg, for your most informative and life-changing advice.
And thank you so much, Roy, for having me.
And best of success on your new book. I think all of us could use a lesson in how to remove that and how to ease back pain from our lives.
I hope that they will find it easy to read. I also say it's good for therapists so that they can expand their knowledge on causes of back pain. And primary care physicians would learn other strategies that they can recommend to their patients as well.
Sounds like a win-win situation, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Roy.
My next guest today is here to talk about a condition that all too many of us suffer from, and that's chronic pain. Did you know that chronic pain afflicts 116 million Americans, more than diabetes, heart disease, and cancer combined? And worldwide, 1.5 billion people suffer from chronic pain. In fact, it's the leading cause of disability worldwide. And in 2011, the National Academy of Science labeled chronic pain a crisis for America, both human and economic. But sadly, as my next guest, Cindy Perlin, informs, most of the $300 billion spent each year for pain treatment in the U.S. is doing more harm than good. And she adds that the biggest shame of all is there are more effective treatments for pain that doctors aren't telling us about and insurance companies won't pay for. And she's here to acquaint us with some of these safer, more effective alternatives. And Cindy Perlin is a pain treatment expert, and herself she's a chronic pain survivor, had a long period of suffering in her younger days, and she's a licensed clinical social worker with a master's degree, and she's a certified biofeedback practitioner, president of the Northeast Biofeedback Society, and she's author of the acclaimed 2015 book, The Truth About Chronic Pain Treatments, The Best and Worst Strategies for Becoming Pain-Free. And hello, Cindy, it's an honor to have you here to inform us about those possible solutions.
Thank you, Roy, for having me on.
Well, let's begin with the basics. By definition, what is chronic pain and what causes it?
Well, chronic pain is defined as pain that lasts 3 months or more.
Oh,
it's assumed that if you have an injury, you will heal within 3 months.
Oh, I see.
So pain that doesn't go away after 3 months is considered chronic.
And what's the primary cause of it? I guess it's something to do with the nerve, isn't it, basically?
Well, there are many, many causes of chronic pain.
I see.
There's stress. which makes causes physiological changes in the body, like chronic muscle tension, changes in blood flow, reductions in ability to heal.
Yeah.
There's muscle injury. If you've had a sprain or a strain, sometimes you end up with something called a trigger point in your muscle that can activate when you get emotionally stressed or when you do too much, even when you sit around too much.
Yeah.
And then some people get pain because they're out of shape, they're weak, and their muscles are stiff.
Yeah.
Some experts say that the that 90% of pain is from the muscles.
Oh.
You can also get pain from bad diet.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there's a lot of ways to get pain, and it's not always easy to diagnose. But what are the most common parts of the body where we might suffer or expect to suffer chronic pain? I know the back is a problem for a lot of us, and get that lower back pain, it won't go away. But what are some of the other? Is headache, I guess, is considered a form of chronic pain, doesn't it?
Right. You know, some people get frequent headaches, and there are some very unfortunate people who never stop having a headache. So headaches are very common. You know, most people get a few a year, and they're not a big problem. But there are some people that have chronic headaches. Neck pain is another very common.
I've had a few bouts of that in my time.
Yeah. And joint pain, arthritis, two kinds of arthritis are very common. Osteoarthritis, which is wear and tear on the joints. And then there's rheumatoid, which is an inflammatory condition.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then there's a lot of less common pain problems.
Oh, I see. Well, let's say that you were to go to your regular physician for treatment of chronic pain. And what is your medical doctor most likely to prescribe to take care of it?
Well, unfortunately, most medical doctors don't have much time to spend with you and don't have much training in managing pain. So they're most likely to write a prescription either for an anti-inflammatory drug or an opioid, both of which are very highly problematic.
Yeah, what is an opioid exactly?
Well, an opioid, a more common name for it is a narcotic.
They're
synthetic opioids, oxycodone and hydrocodone. OxyContin is a mixed formulation, Vicodin. There's also morphine, which has been around for a very long time.
I know what those are. But, well, are the pain-killing drugs, both prescription and over-the-counter, an effective treatment for chronic pain? And do they work? And do they have any potentially serious negative consequences?
Well, the problem with pain medications is that they don't get to the cause of the problem.
Yeah, they just
mask
it, right? They numb the problem.
Right. So, and all of the prescription and over-the-counter painkillers are problematic. Opioids can lead to addiction, even in patients using them as directed. After even a week of using opioids, you can become dependent on them, which means that if you try to stop taking them, you have unpleasant withdrawal effects.
Wow.
And that's one of the things that fuels addiction. People don't want that withdrawal, so they'll do what they can to avoid it. Even the over-the-counter anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen and Tylenol can be life-threatening. Ibuprofen over time can raise your risk of heart disease, and Tylenol, if you take too much, can cause liver problems, including liver failure.
My wife got after me. I used to take Tylenol, and she doesn't let me anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's been around for a long time, and it's only recently that information has come out that it's dangerous. And the same thing with things like ibuprofen.
Oh, I see.
That drug has been around a very, very long time, and people figure if it's available over the counter, it's not a problem to take a lot of it.
Yeah, you figure, the FDA hasn't cracked down on it, it must be okay.
Well, except that the FDA recently, this past summer, came out with a warning that all non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, that taking them for more than a few weeks at a time can significantly raise your risk of heart disease.
And you get addicted to some of these things, and you know, you think they're reducing your pain, and you start taking more of them, and I can see where people would get addicted from that.
Yeah, I mean, they work short term. You get a reward, you take them, you feel better. But for the long term, they don't work.
I see. No,
and they cause more problems.
Yeah, because they're not really addressing the problem, they're just masking it. But how about surgery? Does surgery provide effective relief for most people from chronic pain? Is that a good idea usually?
Well, a lot of people have surgery and they believe that it helped, that they feel better.
Yeah.
But a study just came out recently, published in the British Medical Journal, saying that surgery for chronic pain conditions does no better than a placebo in relieving pain.
Yeah, I think I'll stick with a placebo. It's a lot cheaper.
And a lot fewer chances of complications.
Yeah.
So one thing that happens with back pain is that people have chronic back pain and they go to the doctor and the doctor orders an MRI.
Yeah.
And the MRI shows disc abnormalities.
Oh.
And the doctor says you've got a herniated disc or degenerated disc, and there's your problem, and if we operate, we could fix it.
Oh, I see.
But the problem is that almost everybody has abnormal discs, and the older you are, the more likely you are to have them.
Right.
So it's unlikely that that's the cause of your problem.
Yeah.
And if you have an operation for that, to correct that,
yeah,
not only won't you be addressing the cause of your problem, but then you have all this tissue injury from the surgery,
yeah,
that could potentially give you more problems.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a very good method. But in your book, you describe many safe, effective treatments for chronic pain that mostly the mainstream medical community mostly ignores. We don't have time to discuss them all, but maybe you could briefly describe two or three of the safe, cheap, and effective treatments for common pain, chronic pain. I know you're an expert in,
biofeedback.
Biofeedback. What is that exactly? I've heard the term, but I don't know much about it. But
you're not alone. I call it the best-kept secret in medicine. Biofeedback measures your physiology, things like muscle tension, hand temperature, heart rate, and gives you the information. And then you can learn how to control those things because you have the feedback.
Oh,
so you can
see
what lowers your muscle tension, what adjustments you have to make mentally and physically to do that, or to warm your hands, you can see what works with that. The therapist coaches you in how to do that. And then you can learn to control those things and in that way control or eliminate your symptoms.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I've heard of that before. I just wasn't aware of what that was called. I like, what are these mind-body approaches that you talk about? Well, I guess biofeedback is one of those, but what are some of the other ones that...
Well, psychotherapy, just being able to talk about your problems, to acknowledge them and process them, seems to be helpful. Because it reduces stress, and so does learning how to not worry about your pain.
Oh,
learning to have positive, optimistic thoughts changes your physiology and reduces your pain.
Yeah, that's so true. The mind plays such a major part in controlling the body sometimes that we don't realize it. But
right, and it doesn't mean the pain is all in your head.
Yeah.
What it means is that your mind controls what happens in your body, and that can create pain or create comfort in your body.
Oh, I see. I know you also mentioned body-based practices like chiropractic, physical therapy, and massage. Those, a lot of people dismiss chiropractic, but that when you have that kind of chronic pain, they might be very helpful, I would think.
There are hundreds, if not thousands, of studies showing that chiropractic treatment is an effective treatment for back pain, neck pain, headaches.
Hmm.
It's not, you know, 100% effective for everybody, but it's certainly worth trying, and it's very safe. It's very unusual for anybody to be harmed by a chiropractic adjustment. But some people are afraid of it, more afraid of it than surgery.
Huh.
Surgery is much more likely to have a serious complication.
Oh, I've heard of people saying, well, I don't want to go to a chiropractor and have them crack my neck. Or
well, the chance of an injury during a chiropractic treatment for a neck adjustment is something like 1 in 10 million, according to the RAND Corporation. And for low back adjustment, it's 1 in 100 million.
That's higher odds than winning the Powerball lottery.
Well, actually, Powerball might be a little higher odds.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
If you don't want to,
the odds of getting injured is very, very low. Physical therapy is another very safe treatment and very effective. What often happens is if people get coverage in their insurance, they don't get enough sessions.
Oh, I see.
Insurance likes to restrict coverage for these kinds of therapies, even though the more you get, the more likely they are to be effective.
Yeah, well, that's pretty crappy of them. Well, if you don't want to resort to pharmaceuticals or surgery, how do we select the best alternative options to try? I know you list a number of them in your book, and how do we locate practitioners who are qualified to perform these alternative treatments? That would be the question I would have, is it, where you'd find these experts.
Most states license all of the therapies that I've mentioned, including chiropractors, physical therapists, and massage therapists, and most now license acupuncturists, which is another good therapy for chronic pain.
Well, homeopathy? Would somebody be licensed that can...
Most states do not license homeopathic practitioners, but some of them are physicians.
Yeah.
So if you can find a physician who's a homeopath, that's very good because it means that you found someone who's very open to whatever can help you, and that's always a good sign. So, the other way is word of mouth, talking to people who've been to practitioners and finding out who helped them.
Yeah, that's always a good way to do
it. And in terms of figuring out what might help your particular problem, my book covers all these therapies in great detail and talks about what evidence there is for what conditions in terms of effectiveness.
I wanted to talk briefly about your new book, The Truth About Chronic Pain Treatments, from the subtitle, What Are the Best and Worst Strategies for Becoming Pain-Free? That's a very interesting subtitle.
Right. To summarize, the conventional surgical and pharmaceutical treatments tend to be the least safe and the least effective.
I see.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that's just the opposite of what you would hope.
looking at my book, which is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and can be ordered through your local bookstore, it really lays out what the different options are, how well vetted they are, how much evidence there is, what are the risks, and if you're listening and you have chronic pain and you don't know where to turn next, I think my book is a good place to start.
Yeah, I like what in the Kirkus Review on Amazon, they said it's an all-embracing approach that makes it suitable both for laymen and for healthcare providers alike. And even though they're a little sexist, they should say lay persons. You don't have to be a professional then to read it then and get a benefit out of it. I guess somebody that's...
Right. But it has enough scientific backing in terms of the research citations that it would be meaningful even for a healthcare practitioner.
Yeah. Well, do you have a website where we can learn more about you and your programs and...
Yes, it's cindyperlin.com.
Oh, I see.
Cindy, my last name is P, like in Peter, ERLIN.com.
Yeah, that was a very helpful website. And you can also buy the book. I guess it connects directly to Amazon, so you can get it right there through the website, I noticed. But Well, in conclusion, as regular listeners know, our program is all about a joyful and productive second half of life for every one of us at middle age. And if you suffer from chronic pain, whether it's in your body, wherever it is, and whatever its cause, your life is far from joyful, and it can be extremely hard to be productive and active. But before you let your physician talk you into drug treatment or back surgery, I strongly urge you to go to Cindy Perlin's website and read her book, The Truth About Chronic Pain Treatments. And regardless of what your doctor tells you, you don't have to, quote, learn to live with your pain. You don't have to put up with the hidden dangers or unpleasant side effects from medication. And you don't have to risk a long and painful recovery, plus potential adverse effects of neck and back surgery, only to end up with no significant pain relief. And thank you so much, Cindy, for informing us of all our pain relief options.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
And best of success in getting your message out and promoting. I know you have a proposed legislation that would force insurance companies to pay for some of those alternative treatments. And where does that legislation stand? Is that...
Well, I'm just beginning to get out there and talk about it and try to get sponsors. And there is a tab on my website that says petition, and you can read the legislation and sign the petition interested in supporting that.
Yeah, that sounds like a wonderful thing to do, even if you're not pain suffering, if somebody you know or love has it, or just in general you want to help people. But well, that's it for today. Tune in next week when we'll offer some additional tips on making your best years those years yet to come. Thank you for joining us on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.